Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. With me, I have a very special guest with me. I actually got a privilege to actually interview her husband last week, Richard Elfman. This time, I actually am, I'm actually interviewing his wife, Anastasia Elfman, tonight. And it's a privilege to actually have her here. I cannot wait to dive into this world that she introduced me to with the lady Bridget. We're going to talk a lot of different things here tonight, so let's go on ahead. Let's welcome Anastasia to the show, and let's do it. And hey!
Hello!
Hey, and welcome to the show. It's a privilege to have you here. I just want to say I've been looking for this all week to have you on here and to geek out about some classic horror movies and stuff like that. I'm a big Lon Chaney fan. I grew up on the old school black and white Dracula films, werewolves, stuff like that. So it's a privilege to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me and inviting me.
Let me just tell you this. I really loved with what you did with Bloody Bridget, how you made her into a character and stuff like that. I like the transformation of it. And even though some people might say, oh, it's a little over the top, but at the same time, though, I ended up seeing something that I don't think anybody else has seen, though. Because you go from having this one character who winds up, you know, she doesn't really stick up for herself. And then all of a sudden things happen in that film to the point where she actually stands up to herself. And I like those key moments of like, yeah, I'm not going to take this shit no more. And I'm going to stand up for myself. I love what you did with Bloody Bridget.
Thank you. And that's so kind of you to say. Yeah, I mean, I was lucky that my husband, Richard, who wrote and direct, and we both produced the film. I was so lucky that he wrote such interesting character for me to play, and she definitely had a big character arc, and it was very difficult for me to play kind of like the meek kind of letting people walk all over you, because even though I'm in real life, I'm kind of maybe a little quiet, depending on, you know, what we're talking about, but I definitely have, like, I don't know, I'm like a big sister, so I bring like very big sister energy to everything, and I don't like when things aren't handled well, and, you know, like I stick up for people, so anybody who's like friends with me knows that, you know, I'm not gonna let that stuff kind of like happen. So
exactly.
Yeah, so I love the twist. I mean, not to give too much away, because the film's still on a festival tour, but yeah, she definitely has a major twist. And it was so fun to play. And those are my kind of favorite parts, are like huge characters. And also I love, you know, sticking up for women. And, you know, I think the character that Rick and I created is like going to be so iconic. And I can't wait for people to get to know Bridget.
Right. But you know what, though? I can see people dressing up as her, like at horror cons and stuff like that. And the stuff, just the legs that this thing has with the how outspoken people are about it and how people are praising it. And I love the article on Bloody Disgusting as well, and how well they received it as well. So it just goes to show you that, you know, you can do a movie for independently and let it gain some traction, and you don't have to do a $250 million budget. You can do something on small scale and just have the rewards coming to you.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a special situation because you just talked to Richard, so you know all the ins and outs. I don't even know what he's left me to talk about, but but yeah, we've had such an insane, wonderful response with fans and people who have seen the film. I mean, we've been taking her Bloody Bridget, the film, kind of on a live road show. So we'll travel with the film and go to these film festivals. Like, we've got one coming up. I can't really announce which one, but next month in New Jersey, we're doing a big film festival. And so we're going to do a show and everything. But it's such a wonderful experience to bring like live performance back into the cinematic experience. And that's, I come from the theater. And so I love live performance, and I love, you know, like surprising people and maybe freaking people out, because it's like, I do this number called like the Bloody Bridget number. And I literally rip a beating heart out of a victim, like an audience member's chest, and feed it in front of everybody. And the next second after I'm done, the movie starts, so it's wild for people, because then I'm on screen like a moment after.
I like that idea, though, of the introduction to the character before they get into the whole character on the screen. I love that whole entire presence, because you don't see that anymore, you know. And I wanted to know something. I know that you said theater, so is that where you got your love for Lon Chaney Sr. at? Is the whole theater aspect, or when did you fall in love with like classic cinema like that?
Okay, well, like, I had a pretty, like, out there upbringing, I guess. Both of my parents were former Marines, like, career military. Uh-huh. And so they were very strict. And they also, when they got out of the military, they kind of turned hippie, which was weird. I kind of grew up with, like, very strict, but yet, like, kind of hippie-ish. It was, like, it was very strange. But they didn't allow me to really play video games, which kind of like ended up really alienating me from my peers. And instead, they exposed me to a lot of wonderful cinema and theater. And I was constantly performing. And also with theater, I grew up doing, I'm classically trained in ballet since I was 3. So I definitely grew up in the theater and performing, almost like a old school vaudeville type of like upbringing, I would say. So yeah. When was I exposed to Lon Senior?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Like, what inspired you to pursue a career in the performance of and makeup and artistry, especially in the horror genre as well, you know?
Well, it's kind of like, because I was raised off of like great cinema and the classics. I'm talking about like film noirs and silent horror and the great horror films, and watching a lot of horror that I because I'm a mom now too, that I probably wouldn't have like exposed my daughter to at that age. But I got away with it. I don't know. And here I am. I'm fine.
All right, same here. I was exposed to, like, my very first horror movie was probably either Nightmare on Elm Street or it was Child's Play. My mom thought it was a good idea to traumatize me at age 6 with Child's Play for some reason.
I still worry about Chucky coming in, like, when I'm, like, washing my hair or something, and all of a sudden I'm like, this is going to be it, man. So far, so good, but, like, you know.
Right, knock on wood.
Yeah. I don't have a distinct memory. I know that Phantom of Lon Chaney Sr., 1925, Phantom of the Opera was, like, my first horror, and then I was, like, exposed to, like, The Thriller and John Carpenter's The Thing, and so it was, always very, like, heavy practical effects driven films. And for the longest time, actually, I thought that I was going to be like a professional effects artist. And that's kind of where I wanted, like, I would say no to acting roles and I would just like focus on that. And so, and then like, I just kind of switched it up a little bit because I'm very sensitive. So I get like reactions to the chemicals. And so I was like, okay, I've got to have a little pivot. And I also like did like, acting classes and, you know, like my theater background and stuff. So I have like a lot of experience, but I don't know. I feel like I'm a creator and I love doing all things. So I don't think of myself as just one thing. I just think of myself like, okay, what is the gig? What does the project call for? And that's what I'm going to like pull out from my like, you know, little Lon Chaney bag, you know, right. Like, I don't know, just like make a work moment. It's kind of like how I live. So
I love that though. I love the fact that you're into like the practical makeup and stuff like that. And the fact that too is like, okay, well, I'm allergic to this type of prosthetic. So therefore now I might have to stray away and do something different. And that's where I want to get to, like, with your journey in the entertainment industry and stuff, like, how did you get involved over time? And can you share the journey of going through that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, it's just like life happens and opportunities come up. And I don't know, I was, you know, doing ballet and dance and theater and doing acting classes at Stella Adler, which is like a big like acting studio here in LA. And I guess New York and stuff too. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, just like opportunities happened where like I was able to, you know, do effects makeup in different places. And yeah, and then I met Rick and then just like joined the Elfman train of performance, you know.
My question is this, like, how did you and Richard meet and stuff like that? And what was it like the first time that you actually introduced Richard to your family and stuff? That's what I want to know, like. I'm kind of interested in that.
Well, I mean, the short story is that we just had like mutual friends and mm-hmm. he needed a makeup artist and I'm always looking for fun things to do. So like, and I am now it's like I'm number one fan, but I am a huge fan of him and Danny. And so like, I, mm-hmm. you know, I offered as tribute. And so I did the makeup that he needed. And then he just like kind of fell in love with me. I mean, I don't know.
That's pretty awesome. Like, you become a fan of like Danny and Richard's work, and then all of a sudden you wind up going on a date with Richard, and it just works out. And I like,
yeah,
I love that,
I mean,
story.
Yeah, the first time we met, it was like a meeting. I don't know if I talked publicly about this, but it was just like meeting for for the effects that he needed, and then like he invited me over, and then. Like, as he was walking me out, he gave me, like, a kiss. And I was like, oh, my gosh, what the heck? Like, because I knew that he had, like, toured in, like, France and Europe and things like that. And I was like, okay, so maybe it's just, like, a European thing. I don't know, whatever. And then, I don't know. And then he just fell in love with me. I mean, who doesn't? I don't know.
Right, exactly. I'm already, you know what? We've only been known here for 11 minutes, and I'm just flabbergasted by you. I really love your energy.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And hey, Justin, it's good to have you in the live chat. I do appreciate that. What's going on, John? Thank you. So there's also some other stuff I wanted to talk about. Like, what is it about classic horror monsters that fascinates you the most?
Oh, I mean, I don't think it's just one thing. It's everything. It's the lighting, it's the editing, it's the cinematography, it's the attention to detail, it's the sets, it's the costuming, it's the script and story structure. I mean, also because it's like, okay, this is a little silly, I guess, but I have severe dyslexia. And so I've always felt like the outsider. And I've even been picked on by like teachers and things that didn't understand dyslexia. And people still don't really understand that, you know, it's just like a learning. I learn differently and it takes me longer to learn things, but I'm, you know, like I'm definitely drawing my best all the time. But it's like, because I've had that kind of, I've had bullies because they don't understand me. And I sometimes I'm shy, especially if we're not talking about my favorite things like Lon Chaney Sr. So I guess like I identify with the monsters because I feel like an outsider monster trying to like be friends with all these regular like normies, you know what I mean?
Right. I totally get that because here's the thing with me. I have ADHD as well. And I'm very much, I would have to say the only time that I was actually outspoken now is because of the podcast. Before, I used to be really shy, really timid to the point where like, here's the thing. If you're not talking about something I love, I'm like, okay, deuces, I'm out. I'm good luck to you and whatever you're talking about. And I used to be like also the type of person where I was like shy and awkward to the point where I was also getting bullied and picked on as well, to where I was like misunderstood. And so exactly. I totally get that exactly. Because I was like, and then you start questioning yourself, right? Is there something wrong with me? What the hell is going on here? But then you realize, you know what? It's not me, it's them. I'm good.
No, I have to say, like, I don't love the internet, but it's been so reaffirming to me to see, like, these little reels and things of people who have dyslexia and things like that, because it's like, I didn't grow up with anybody who had dyslexia. I always had to, like, explain it to people, and it just felt like a bright light on me that I didn't really want. It's like, I don't mind. This is a funny thing. It's like, people think that, like, I'm so, like, extreme or wild in my day-to-day life, but honestly, like, I do not want to talk to anybody. I just want to get in and out, and like, unless we're talking about films or something like that, like, I just want to be on my way. But it's like growing up feeling like you're under a spotlight because you're different was really interesting. And then also having to constantly like make believe or pretend that I knew how to do something. Right. Just so that I wouldn't get bullied by teachers, you know? So calling you out, math teacher of like sixth grade.
I've been there. Hey, I've been there myself. Trust me. I've always like, yeah, I got this. I don't got this, but I'm going to pretend like I do. And they always wind up trying to get me to come to the front. So I totally get it.
But I have to say, just like a quick little bind out, I'm glad that I went through that because now it's like I have so much empathy for people who are struggling or with anything like that. And then also our daughter has severe dyslexia. So now I am like her, nobody messes with her and I know what to look for. And I'm talking with teachers and I'm making sure like I'm her advocate. Like I'm mama bear. I'm mama lion. Like do not mess with anyone.
I don't blame you. I wouldn't want anyone to mess with my kids either, you know? So, yeah, I totally get it. I really do. So my other thing is this. So how do you approach paying homage to iconic horror features while bringing a fresh modern spin?
Ooh, like are we talking about like my live performances or like in films?
Just in general.
Like my life going to Gelson's.
Yeah, because I find that interesting about how, you know, you love these iconic horror creatures, but what I'm wondering is, do you pull from that and try to make it your own thing, like have your own way of actually presenting a certain character that you're playing?
I mean, like it or not, things get twisted into like my version of something, but I try my best. I mean, the key thing I think for me and for horror lovers, it's, I do not want to change. I don't want to modernize anything. I don't want to change what is already a masterpiece and perfection. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that gets maybe askewed is just my version of what I love and what I'm seeing. I mean, I do a lot of these kind of dramatic, horror-centric burlesque. They're not very burlesque-y, but I just say burlesque as a term so that people know that there's going to be some nudity, because like I'm a mom, I worry about kids. So, but they shouldn't be at like these scary movies anyways.
No.
But anyways, so I tend to do these pre-shows and I fine-tune them for films that I am very inspired by. Like I had the Hodorowsky family. I made an original performance for their 30th anniversary of Santa Sangre, and I was flown down to Mexico City, and I created this wonderful, dramatic, surreal performance. Like, literally, I do my own effects, so I had my own rigging. I had, like, fake arms that pulled out off and blood splattering and stuff, and I did it on point, and, you know, like, there's a ballerina in the film and stuff. So, but I'm like a very obsessive person, like a perfectionist, and I'm very like highly detail oriented. So I create, because of my background, I create the costumes and the props myself. And everything as much as I can and what budget allows, if there is a budget, I do it as close to the film as possible. And I don't know, people love this like kind of immersive experience that I offer. And I'm not seeing, I mean, I don't want to say that like I haven't seen anybody do it, because I don't want people to copy me. I want to own this area of performance.
And right, because it's like
for all of the different films, like I have one for Suspiria, I have a dramatic horror burlesque for Joe Dante's Howling that I actually almost performed, but they canceled at last second because of like problems with the theater, which was like such a bummer, but I've got it ready to go. I do stuff for our films like Forbidden Zone, and I've got a bunch of other ones, and the Santa Sangre one that I mentioned, but like I love creating these. It's almost like it's my like love letter to my favorite films and my favorite creators. So
I love that.
It's like my favorite thing to do.
I think that's actually the part.
It keeps me happy.
Right. But I also think that it keeps everything authenticity, right? It keeps everything authentic, everything under one umbrella just for you to be able to say, you know what? I got this in the bag for me, for what I like to do. And my inspiration comes from this. And I think that's a fantastic way of actually looking at it and that kind of perspective. And I definitely like that about you.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I'm very, I'm like a very niche, like kind of performer. So like the films that I love isn't always everyone's cup of tea, but like I get very inspired and very obsessive. And I love to have this outlet of these pre-show immersive performances. And like I said, like nobody's doing them.
No.
So I hope more creators reach out, especially ones that I'm like huge fans of, because I want to keep on doing this and keep the ball rolling.
I love it. I love the energy that you bring to something like that too. I can definitely tell when you're really into that character because of the way, just the way you move, the way you actually portray the character and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, it's no longer Anastasia. This is actually Bloody Bridget. I can definitely tell when you're dialed into something. Especially with Richard's live performances with the band and stuff like that too. And I'm like, yeah, Anastasia's gone. This is the character she's portraying. I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely into this. This is actually pretty cool.
That's so nice. Thank you. That means a lot.
You're very welcome. Like, normally whenever I see actors and stuff like that, they're not dialed into I like method acting. So some actors I can say where, like, you don't see the passion and stuff like that. With you, I can feel the passion that you have for something. The point where that character just takes over you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, like you know, not every creator or actor is a fan of the genre or even films or television.
Right.
So I feel like that kind of sets me apart because I am like a lifelong avid monster kid. I love horror. I know way too much about horror and films and, you know, like my favorite actors and creators and things like that. So like, yes, I'm so glad that that comes across. I want that, like, I want to focus my insanity and use it for good.
That's awesome. So do you think the horror makeup and design have a deeper role in storytelling? How do you use it to evoke emotion to or fear?
Oh, man, of course it does. It's a huge part of storytelling. I mean, to use it as fear, obviously, if it's shot well. I mean, I'm kind of like old school. I don't like to see the creature or the monster or the entity in a trailer because for me, it's like, oh, so like, why am I going to the film? You know,
right.
Like, why am I paying $100 at the end of the day to go see a movie if
exactly.
I've already seen the monster? Like, can we keep a little bit? But that's the kind of thing. I mean, like, this is like a side point, but it's like, I feel.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Like big studios would really make a killing if they had like somebody, like an avid horror fan or creature fan on, you know, on the payroll to tell them like, hey, actually horror fans would appreciate if you didn't include the monster or,
right.
You know, like maybe make this an actual werewolf movie or just make it a different movie in general, you know, like stop remaking the films that people hold so dearly. Like just, you know, there's a whole bunch of wonderful artists and writers who have new original stories that want to be made, you know, like leave
exactly
our masterpieces alone.
And that's what I want to bring up to you too. I'm glad you brought up the major studios and stuff, because that's one of the things I had major beef with one studio in particular, especially whenever I did my Pet Sematary review. And you know, it was copy and paste from the movie, from the original Salem's Lot. I'm like, why am I watching this? I'm suffering through this. I'd rather go do a root canal than I'm like, but you know, that just brings up another point though. Look at Terrifier, for example. It was a $2.3 million budget, and it winds up making like $20 million.
No, it's insane.
It is. And not only that, I wish that smaller studios would actually do this. Make a budget that's small, and then go on ahead and make your money back. You're not gonna make your money back in debt $250 million. You're just not gonna hit that mark. With it being a $250 million budget and then trying to make it all back at that. And I love the first Joker movie, but Joker 2, I feel like that they could have scaled the money back to the point where you make a smaller film again and make your money back faster. But now what I want to say this, like, now, as far as the monsters to go, I'm a huge fan of Jaws. I love Jaws. That's also the reason why I like it, is because it doesn't show the shark. You know that there's something in the water, but you don't know what it is in the water. And basically, if you think about it like this, I said this to one of my friends. Do you ever watch the movie Alien? He goes, yeah. I'm like, okay. What if I told you that Alien is basically Jaws? He goes, what do you mean?
What?
He goes, yeah. Think of it like this. You don't see the alien until halfway through the movie. it's and then the tension is revved up to the point where you're waiting for that point of where you get to see the alien just as you are trying to see the shark in Jaws. So therefore, Alien is basically Jaws in a sense, but not the same scale as Jaws.
Radical.
So he's like, I didn't think about that. I was like, yeah, next time when you do like a rewatch of Alien, think of it like that. He goes, okay. But you're right though. I wish that you had that slow tension build up. And once that tension is gone, you release everything that you were teasing within that thing. But I don't like having everything revealed to me in a trailer, and I do trailer reactions. I do trailer reactions, but here's the thing. I've learned now, I'm only going to do things that I'm interested in, but I'm going to make sure that my friends are actually watching the trailer before I do and say, do they reveal too much? They said, yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm done. I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to just go see the movie. I'm already interested in it. There's no point of doing a trailer reaction. So
yeah,
that's how I do things now. I just scale it back a little bit.
No, exactly. I mean, I'm at the point where for new films, especially horror films, I do not watch a trailer. I listen to a lot of horror podcasts and breakdowns and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I love horror and I've got chores to do. So I don't go insane. I will not listen to the podcast, and then I won't read any articles. I'll try to stay like as much as I can. I'll try to stay off social media until I can watch the film, because I don't want it spoiled, because it's literally like not even after opening weekend, like different like film pages will lift important scenes and spoil it. I'm like really, what are we doing? Like, what's the point? Like, at least give me opening weekend, you know.
Right.
Good lady
coming soon to a theater near you, and then
it's actually just on my phone.
Right. Opening weekend is the movie. I get what you're saying. Just show me something, a little bit of a teaser. Matter of fact, I didn't even watch the new vampire movie that's coming out in December, on December 25th. Because of the fact that I'm afraid that it's going to reveal too much or anything either. So,
well, yeah, we went to go see Long Legs recently in the theater, and their trailers for other films, I felt like we're like giving away really crucial plot points. And I was like dying, because it's like, where am I going to go in the movie theater? You know, because like I want to see the trailers too. But I just like, I don't know. I feel like we gotta pull back just a little bit. I mean, I'm going to be so excited about these films and stuff, and to like get Hollywood going again. You know, it's like, just like, pull back a little bit on the important plot points, you know, like, let me figure it out. I mean, to wrap that up, it's like, my thought is like, I don't even like to know what a movie's about. Like, the last film that I went in not knowing anything was like Barbarian. And that was so great to like, because I love finding out just in the moment, because that has so many twists and turns. Like, I couldn't believe. But that was because I didn't watch the trailer. Because after I watched the film and then I went home to watch the trailer, I was like, hey, God, I didn't watch this. Cause, like, crucial plot points ruined.
Right. But you know, you inspired me to probably try that. Do like a challenge of not watching a trailer and then just going into it, experience it for itself instead of being amped up on the trailer. Because trailers can either enhance the experience or take away the experience of going to a theater. So you challenged me to actually try not to watch a trailer, especially if it's something I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So I might actually give that a shot. I might actually just go in blind.
It's really great. I mean, because I love learning, and it just like augments the experience for me, because I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Right, you know? Exactly.
Like, is this a romance movie? Is this a comedy? Am I in a horror movie? What are we doing here?
Exactly. So who or what has influenced your approach to makeup and performance in horror? I know it's Lon Chaney Sr.
It's Lon Chaney Sr. Of course. I mean, he influences me so much, like just even in my personal life. I mean, the dedication he brought, his work ethic, I could just gush about him. He's so wonderful. And I also, like, I love doing indie films, because I get to do I mean, generally, I'm very hands-on, and I like to help create my character. It's like, obviously, I defer to the director, and I also listen to, like, the writer, you know, and I take notes from the script and everything. But I do like to build my characters with the makeup, the hair, the wardrobe choices, you know, all of that, the physicality. I try to bring something different to every character. I mean, sometimes I do get typecasted, but I like it because I end up like, it's like, you know, this woman ends up being a demon or ghost or something like that. And I love that. I love getting messy. I love getting bloody. I love effects. You know, it's so much fun for me.
Exactly. And I love practical effects over CGI effects. I'm just going to point that out. I mean, I don't mind like a little bit of CGI, but it can be oversaturated with CGI to the point where it takes me out.
I mean, I am a huge practical effects fan. I do think that there can be a marriage between them. Kind of like I use this kind of example a lot, like with The Walking Dead, where they have like little green screen moments of like things inside the zombies, you know, that you, it would be hard to achieve practically, but it's, you know, like it's a marriage. So I think they can work seamlessly together. I think it's knowing your audience and knowing the project that you're a part of. I mean, if you're tackling these iconic horror films, your audience wants to see super practical, and it's okay if it's like joined, you know, together with some CGI nuances. I mean, a lot of my friends are big into animation and into visual effects and stuff, and they are so talented. So I don't want to offend anybody because I love them so much.
Absolutely not.
But I do have a lot of friends who are in like solely practical as well. So, and I come from practical. I wish I had the talent and knowledge to do like visual effects. I'm very picky, so I know what I want, so I'll like whisper into Ricky's ear when it's one of our projects. I'm like, I think we need more fire. I think we need more lightning. You know,
right? Exactly. I gotcha. But yeah, there's also something else I want to bring up as well. Like, if you would give someone advice and to aspiring special effects artists or performance interested in horror, what would you give them?
Oh boy. So advice for those specific things for effects? I mean, I guess just know your craft. You know, go to school for it. Get, you know, apprentice. I did a lot of apprenticing and I earned my way through that. I worked free a lot because I wanted to do what I do now. And so I worked hard. What else? I mean, you know, watch the classics. Everybody has a different idol or, you know, version of who their favorite effects artist is. And so I would say just like figure out who calls you and do your research, like know your stuff back and forth, because people in the horror community, they're avid fans. And you know, if you want to be taken seriously, you've got to know your stuff. You know, I can't tell you how many times, like as an actor alone, I'll try to have a conversation with somebody, and it's so flat because they don't like, even just an actor has not watched the classics. They've not done their homework. They know nothing about great cinema. They only know about like Avengers movies, and it's like, okay, those are fun, but like, can we get back to like the classics here? Do you know like Hitchcock? Do you know James Whale? You know,
right.
like, come on.
Exactly. And you know what? I appreciate the fact that my mom raised me on the old school Dracula, Frankenstein, King Kong, old black and white King Kong, and also to even the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Abbott and Costello, and stuff like that. I grew up on all that stuff to the point where I'm like, you know what? I can actually critique the horror genre and review stuff, and then also bring that into my reviews for the modern day horror stuff too, as well. that's something I can actually appreciate, with the fact that my mom actually gave me a reason to actually show me some black and white cinema and stuff like that too, some old school movies, and I really loved them. I hands down, one of my favorite stuff. My favorite things is the Wolfman, the transformation with the Wolfman, and
so
just
wonderful.
It's just awesome. And you know, I even grew up with the Creature of the Black Lagoon, the Mummy, stuff like that. So I grew up with all that stuff, and I love it.
Yeah, same here. And also, because I'm a mom, so our daughter Audrey, she's 16, and it's one of my favorite things of being a parent is exposing our daughter to great cinema. And we've been going through, like, very slowly, because it's like, these are my favorite things, so I don't want to rush anything on her. But just exposing her to great classic horror films, and then also taking note of what she likes, and trying to kind of cultivate kind of a package for her, and show, just exposing her to these great art films, you know, because like, they don't make films like that anymore. And it's so rushed. I mean, I think one of the main problems about like modern day cinema is that, no, like, they're probably not a bad actor or not a bad director. It's like, they're just constantly rushed. Like, mm-hmm. like these films, it's like they were kind of left alone to create and let the artists be artists and not being hounded. I mean, like, some obviously are and were, but right. A lot of times it's like they had these like more, you know, longer production periods and stuff. And some of it because of necessity, because it's like they, you know, like the technology wasn't there. But I think that's what makes it special, is that there's not a suit, like somebody, you know, keeping track of the money, trying to like water down somebody's art, you know?
And that's one thing I liked about what Rob Zombie did, was the fact that, you know, nobody really believed in his Halloween movie or any of his other stuff. He's like, well, screw you guys, I'm just going to go ahead and go independent and make the movies that I want to make and not let you water down my stuff.
Yeah, so, that's what we did with Bloody Bricket for Ricky. It was like, I don't want anybody to water his insanity down, because he's a cult and pop culture icon, like a living legend. I mean, don't tell him, because I need him to take out the trash later. Okay, so we need to keep him humble.
Okay, not a problem. I'll hear this from him.
So between us, he's a living legend in my book, and a lot of other, he's inspired so many creators, a lot of creators in animation. And that's the thing. It's like, I want him to create the way that he creates. And I was very cautious working with him, not to like stifle him, you know, even though some things, like maybe I was a little uncomfortable, but it's like, it's for the art. And I wanted him to have his full vision. Because I mean, at first I was kind of like, I don't know if I'm the right person for Bloody Bricket. Like, maybe somebody else should do that. Like, because we're married and stuff, I didn't want to like, I mean, we've right. worked together for so long beforehand, but it's like, you know, like things get tense sometimes, especially in this case with Bloody Bricket, we were self-funding. And so we were producing. So it's like, it would have been a huge thing if I was only the star of the film. And mm-hmm. in almost every single scene, like I had full days, like 15, 16 hour days, nonstop. The only time I sat down was like for my makeup. I hardly ate. It was just back and forth, meeting new scene partners and then delivering the dialogue and everything and trying to like capture the moment. But so like that alone would have been enough. But to put on like the producer hat, so having to like feel like wanting everybody to have a good time and
right.
feel great about their work, and like kind of being the mommy on set, and then also being his wife, so taking care of him while in my Bloody Bridget wig and everything. It was a lot. I don't know where I was going with that, but basically,
no, it's perfectly fine.
Indie cinema, that's what we did. We self-funded Bloody Bridget, and
right.
You know, because it's such a weird, unique, original horror film. I mean, we're such huge fans of horror. It's like, that's why we did this. That's why we took this big risk to to do an original, you know, a Richard Elfman original horror story.
I love that. But yeah, I think that this movie is going to be fantastic for you. But I know that you're also going to be doing something for Lon Chaney Sr. as well. And I want you to be able to talk about that because I know you're geeked out over it. I'm excited for you to do this.
Are you talking about this?
Yes, I'm talking about that.
Yes, I'm so thrilled. Thank you for giving me a moment. So
you're very welcome.
So we are doing the official 99th anniversary screening event of Lon Chaney's 1925 Phantom of the Opera. And so I was given this opportunity because people within the Chaney circle knew about my wild live pre-show performances, and they came to me and wanted me to do something similar and knew that I was a lifelong Lon Chaney and Chaney family fan. And so it's just been the perfect partnership. I'm doing this. I'm performing a pre-show before the screening. And then I'm also co-producing the event with my producing partner, Mauricio Alvarado of Rockin' Pins, which is an incredible merch website. And he does all of this licensed merch, like from Betty Boop to Chaney to the Fleischer cartoons and stuff. And what really spoke to me was that he works with licensing from artists, because I think that if a lot of fans knew that you could buy licensed merch and that money that they're paying go to the artists versus buying an off brand that just lightly resembles whatever that is that goes to somebody else, I think everybody would pick the licensed version.
Me too.
So anyway, so I'm partnering with Mauricio, and I'm doing this in collaboration with my friend Ron Chaney, who was the great-grandson of Lon Chaney Sr. and the grandson of Lon Chaney Jr. Oh. And so this is literally a dream project for me. I don't know, to bring my love and dedication of horror, and especially my love of Lon Chaney Sr. It's like, I don't want to tear up, but this is just such a big event for me, and I want to get the word out there to all the horror fans and pre-cut horror and classic film buffs and stuff. And we're also having a live accompaniment with an organist. His name is Cliff Ratliff. Mm-hmm. I think I'm saying it right. He does all these wonderful classic scores to silent films. So he has a fun following. And so we're creating this wonderful event, and I'm hoping that this is very popular, and I would love to do other Chaney films The Unknown. I'm so inspired by Lon Chaney Sr., so it's limitless for me.
That's awesome, though. I'm excited for you. I think that's just fantastic to actually have your dream come true, to be able to do something like that. Because opportunities don't like that happen all the time. So it's just good to see you.
No, I mean, it makes me shaky just thinking about that. I'm so beyond with excitement for this event. And I know that there's a huge audience. And I just want to get the word out and let them know that this is happening. And also, one of my passions, like I said before, is bringing live performance back into the cinematic experience. I love doing immersive stuff, not teasing people, but I just love the vaudeville-esque kind of performance. I love with our films, it's like we get booked and we tour with them, with Forbidden Zone. We'll get booked from a theater and we'll tap into the local talent, and so we give their local performers a platform. And then also I love supporting local cinemas, because for me, movies, film, cinema, that's my religion. And so a movie theater is my temple, is my church. And so I want to give back and use my tiny little platform to give to the local talents and stuff.
I love that about you. I love that you're doing something like that and paying respect and homage to other people that want to get into acting and stuff like that and being indie actors and actresses. That's just fantastic. I love that, of what you're doing with that. I think that you're very welcome. But yeah, I think that's everything that I had wanted to cover as far as this interview goes and stuff like that. But please, if you and Richard want to come back on, you guys are more than welcome to. I would love to have you guys back on again.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
You're very welcome. I'm glad that you were able to come out.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you. And yes, today I am actually celebrating my second year of being married. And thank you, Anastasia. I do appreciate that. And I can't wait to actually go out the fall weekend to be able to actually eat and just celebrate with my wife that way.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank you. Anna, please stay after we get done signing off. I want to just exit you out of the studio properly. And always until next time, guys, have a great and safe night. And catch you guys on the next one. Bye-bye. Later.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Get everything for your next project at Menards. Tackle tough jobs with Loctite Power Grab. This all-purpose construction adhesive is easy to use and bonds to a variety of materials. Plus, it's high strength, paintable, and reduces the need for clamping with 0 second instant grab. Save big money on Loctite Power Grab at Menards and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.